While no one argues that GDP is perfect, this 20th century statistic is still the default way we measure how well or badly countries are doing. But should we do better, and how? Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists around the world. My name is Tim Phillips, and today I'm speaking to Professors Diane Coyle and Jonathan Haskell, who have just shared the first Indigo Prize for the best original essays that suggest better ways to measure economic activity in the 21st century. The panel of judges couldn't split their entries, and so they share the £125,000 award. I began by asking them about the Indigo Prize and what first attracted them to enter.
The Indigo Prize is an essay competition proposed by a hedge fund called Letter One, who in the summer of this year asked for any comers to write a 5,000-word essay which would have specific proposals to improve GDP, to make GDP a better measure for the digital and entrepreneurial economy in which we live, and asked for a mixture of kind of practical proposals as to what to do, and a vision about whether maybe GDP should be replaced altogether. Indeed, the Indigo organisation have got their own index, which is quite a radical departure from GDP.
Diane, you've written your own book about GDP before, so this is perfect for you.
How could I not enter a competition asking about how to improve GDP?
A lot of other economists have written about how GDP could be improved. So what could you bring that's fresh to this, Jonathan?
We were in many ways rather incremental. So we spent the first third of our essay basically defending GDP and trying to explain what the strengths of GDP were. And then the sort of second third was really proposing some incremental extensions. So, for example, as many people who listen to this podcast will be aware, the machine upon which they're listening to this podcast is a remarkably different machine to the kind of machine that they might have had at their fingertips 5, 10, certainly 15 years ago. And so measuring the quality of new goods is going to be a very important task in getting GDP right. The second area that we emphasised is that because many more activities in GDP are much more knowledge intensive, many more intangibles are being produced in the economy, ideas, design, software programs, things like that, we were of the view that we should try to measure the intangible sector more intensively as well. And then finally, we talked a little bit, as Diana's talked about as well, about measuring the non-market sector. So if you were an Uber driver who used to sit at home in their spare time, just give their friends some lifts, and now you're actually busy driving people around, that's a bit of a change to the conception of GDP that we had before, which is a sort of a big split between the market and the non-market sector.
Diane, if Jonathan's incremental, is your proposals are slightly more radical, aren't they?
It is. My co-author and I, Benjamin Mitrokhana, have both written histories of GDP, so we acknowledge how useful it has been, but we think it isn't anymore. So we proposed an interim step that's not completely different from Jonathan's proposal, but it was there were slight differences. So we proposed measuring the intangibles far better, and that's Jonathan's area of expertise, but also removing some excessive counting of the contribution of finance to the economy. This financialization, we think, has been a problem. And looking or using a measure that gives you some insight into distribution. So looking at median per capita GDP as the headline figure. And these are something that we saw as interim steps that could relatively quickly be done and would take us towards a better measure. But it's not completely dissimilar to Jonathan's proposal. But for the longer term, we are advocating something far more radical. It involves a change in the way you think about measuring welfare and economic progress in some fundamental sense. A lot of national accountants would tell you GDP is only a measure of activity, but that's false, partly because that's not how we use it. We talk about it as a measure of welfare. But also because as soon as you start deflating GDP and talking about real terms, comparisons over time, you're getting towards some welfare measure. But if you want to measure welfare, we think it's much better to take a multi-sense capabilities approach, which isn't just about income and how much you have available as income or consumption expenditure in a given period, but about what opportunities, what assets do you have access to that allow you to lead the kind of life that you want to. And we classified the assets people need access to in six categories: physical assets, financial assets, natural capital, intangible capital, and human and social capital. And as well as measuring totals, we would want to measure access to those. And that might be geographic in terms of access to physical capital, or it might be by socio-demographic group. But you, again, there want some indicator of distribution. So it's more radical. It's much more difficult. It's not something that we could achieve quickly, and it involves research and data gathering. So that's a long-term program. But ultimately, I think the GDP concept we have now just doesn't measure economic welfare in the kind of economy we have.
many of the ways in which people propose to extend GDP, for example, a human development index has been criticised for this. They run into the problem that you end up adding up different things or double counting. Now, as careful economists, how did you get around this problem, Jonathan?
So we're quite critical of precisely the human development index and indeed of the Indigo Group's own index for exactly this reason. The human development index, as you were saying, Tim, is a mix of three indicators with a weight of a third, a third, a third, and that's fine, but it then forces you to face up as to what you think the weights might be. And as I mentioned earlier on, one of the reasons why we defended GDP is we defended it around the theme that the weights which are used in GDP are actually really rather clever, and this isn't, comes as natural to an economist, but maybe not to non-economists. The weights used in GDP are prices. So if we've got the difficult issue of adding up pencils and iPads, how on earth are we going to do that? Five pencils and five iPads. Clearly, five iPads are not the same as five pencils. Well, the answer is, the economist's toolkit is we reach for the prices. So we weight them by the price of pencils, which is very cheap, the price of iPads, which is much more expensive. And that gives you some measure of the relative amounts of the valuations in the economy, which you know we think reveals people's relative values on these things. So we're very much in favour of using prices, which puts us, therefore, rather against these kind of composite indicators, because as I say, we don't know what the values are. On the other hand, it gets us into great trouble if we've got a whole load of goods which don't have any prices, such as email and podcasts, such as people are listening to now. So we've got some proposals to try to look at that.
But I think this takes us to almost a political economy debate about how many numbers can people pay attention to. Although there have been lots of criticisms of GDP over time, and lots of other approaches, some of them single indicators, but also a huge proliferation of dashboards. OECD's Better Life Index is a very well-known one, but there are lots of others. The trouble is that that leads you into this vast array of indicators, and who can look at 50 or more? So you need some kind of structure or parsimony to make it feasible to use in the kind of public debate that we need to have about statistics and the kind of information that policymakers need when they're setting economic policies. And I think this is actually an unresolved debate. Can people only look at one number, which at the moment is the 0.3% or whatever it is, quarterly change in GDP, or can actually you use six numbers instead?
Which I think takes us to the person who won the third prize, Alice Lastman, who is a second-year geography student from Durham University. And her proposal was essentially to do some opinion polling and ask people what they thought about these various different indicators which you proposed. So I think that's one way of getting over this issue about how you actually decide, you know, how much weights to have. Actually, because we like prices, we're in favour of those as being, we don't use the word neutral weights, but at least they're market-determined weights. Otherwise, we worry that you end up privatising these indicators so that everybody sits around and devises their own weights. But as you say, Diane, maybe in a democracy, people should be allowed to use their own weights.
And that approach has been used. Measuring Australia's Progress was a dashboard approach that used selected indicators using an input from a consultation among the Australian public. This problem is why we thought about it in terms of capitals and bringing some economic theory to the selection of those indicators rather than a free-for-all.
Every change measurement involves some winners and some losers. Can you pick the winners and losers from your changes, Jonathan?
Well, the bulk of our changes would therefore benefit those economies who are investing much more in intangible assets. That is to say, those economies doing much more knowledge investment, investing more in design and R&D and innovation and all that kind of thing. And my team with whom I worked on this, including Cal Corrado and Dan Sickle, have done some world-leading work on attempting to measure all of this.
And in our case, any economy that is investing would look better on this indicator. Any economy where the economy is being run unsustainably would look worse. If you're concerned about sustainability at all, then you need to look at balance sheets and assets. And some of that data already exists and some doesn't. So any economy, for example, that's running down natural resources without reinvesting in natural capital would look much worse on our approach. Economies with unsustainable public finances, where those off balance sheet liabilities aren't acknowledged, would look worse. The economies investing in human capital and intangible capital would look better.
And so that means I think that on our side, for the intangible capital, economies like Sweden, United States, these economies who are investing a lot in their intangible capital would look much better on our index. But to the extent that those economies might be deteriorating their environment, then we would overstate it relative to an index which took that kind of thing into account.
There have been many previous ideas for how to improve GDP, as we said, and none of them have been picked up as policy. Is there any hope that sort of improvements that you are proposing will one day become ways in which we do measure our wealth?
I think there's more engagement in this debate than I can ever remember. And it's driven partly by the digital sector feeling underappreciated in the official statistics. It's driven partly by concerns about environmental sustainability, which have only grown. So there's a lot of research going on now. In this country, the Office of National Statistics has funded the Economic Statistics Centre of Excellence, and there's other research going on. It's being picked up in other countries too. The obstacle, I think, is that it's a bit like changing technical standards. You need enough consensus that everybody's going to make the switch. And this has always been a slow process. Revisions, even in the existing framework, take 20 years or 15 years if they're quite significant. I think the will is there, the research is going on, but it's going to be a slow process.
I think there's a couple of other elements to this, actually. The people like Diane and Ben, and on our side, like my co-authors, Cal Corrado, Dan Sickle, Kevin Fox, are actually quite involved with the statistical authorities on a day-to-day basis as part of their overall research effort in a way that maybe has not been done quite so much before. And so if economists are more involved with the statistical authorities, then there's much more chance, it seems to me, that some of these ideas are going to get implemented. I think the second thing is that a number of these proposals have been road tested already. So as I was mentioning before, Cal Corrado, Dan Sickle for the US, and myself and my other co-authors for the UK and other countries have tried to look at the intangible assets and tried to redo the national accounts with all these intangible assets in them. And they've demonstrated, I think, to be feasible and to be doable. And that's helped the statistical authorities. Third point, if I may, which is that some of what we propose to do is actually pretty cheap. So as I was saying before, because we're rather keen on using prices to weight things in GDP, I mentioned the iPads and the pencils before, our method falls down if you've got free goods like email and podcasts and maps and Wikipedia and things like that. So one way of getting around that is actually to ask people what they would be willing to pay for email, Facebook and all those kinds of things, and use those as prices to then build that into the GDP system. Asking people what they'd be willing to pay in the era of the internet is amazingly cheap. One can run massive online surveys of hundreds of thousands of people in a relatively cheap kind of way. That reason, I think, would make it attractive to statistical authorities because it wouldn't need a wholesale, massive part of expenditure and a complete change in their departments and their procedures to implement it.
Yes, I agree with that. I think all the statistical agencies could pretty quickly implement the union of our proposals and Jonathan's proposals for short-term changes. It would be relatively straightforward to do.
Finally, back to the prize. These sorts of prizes are fairly rare in economics. So do you think they achieve something that normal ways of publishing your ideas don't do, Diane?
Well, there is a literature on the importance of prizes in stimulating innovation. And they haven't been tried so much in economics, but I think that kind of reasoning absolutely applies, that it's a very good way to bring about certain new ideas.
I think it's worth placing in context the traditional method of advancing the subject is what academics call peer review. And the peer review process is a thorough process, but it's very time consuming. That is to say, people write a paper, they send it to other academics who think hard about it, send back comments and all that kind of thing. That can take years and years and years. The advantage of the prize, of course, is that it's much quicker. That said, many of the ideas, at least in our team's entry, are the outcome of many, many years of peer-reviewed work, if you see what I mean. So I don't think they're a substitute for that. But on the other hand, they've brought a lot of this type of very academic work, they've made it much more salient. They've brought it to the attention of the general public and the statistical agencies and all that kind of thing. So I think they have a role not only in steering the kind of work that we do, but also in hastening their attention out of academe into the practical world of measurement. And into the practical world of public discussion.
And that engagement with the public is particularly important when it comes to statistics, because this is how we understand the economy. It's how we conceptualise it. It affects people's behaviour. It affects government policy. And in democracies, statistics are profoundly important.
Jonathan and Diane, that's very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have been talking to the winners of the Indigo Prize, Diane Coyle and Jonathan Haskell. You can download their papers and find out more about their co-authors and the prize itself by visiting global-perspectives.org.uk. This has been a Vox Talk, presented by the Centre for Economic Policy Research. For more in the series, visit voxeu.org/vox-talks.